I almost forgot what time it was, and I heard Mom call my name to see if I was okay. I flipped all but one of the lights off in my room, shoved the packet back into the bra, and slipped it under the bed. I put Donna's jacket across my lap and pretended that I had fallen asleep. A moment later, Mom came in, woke me gently, and told me to hop in bed. I was brilliant in the role of innocent, sleeping daughter. I kissed her and mumbled a bit. And after she left, I waited almost 40 minutes before leaving the bed. I brought all of the treats up onto the comforter and played in the dark until it was safe to put a towel under the door and switch the light back on. I only used the nightlight because it was sexier than the bright one over my head. I went into a deep, drugged, happy, thoughtful, nasty, and still innocent fantasy. I'll have to tell more later. I feel so dreamy right now. I'm on 2 Valium, another line of coke, and half a joint. I splurged, but damn if I don't feel absolutely perfect. I think I'll look at Flesh World issues for a while before it gets light out. I'll either tell you the fantasy I just had, or one I get a new idea for from the magazines. Nine, nine. L. Christmas Eve Day, 1987. Dear Diary, I'm at the gazebo, trying to get the tune of Christmas carols out of my head. Mom has been playing them all morning. I like Christmas. But with my head feeling like it was, I could hardly stand any more of it. Dad caught me when I was leaving and asked for a dance with his favorite little girl. Dad and I hadn't danced in years, I don't think. Memories of parties at the Great Northern, with the blur of streamers and buffets and crystal, came into my head. The way I saw them as Dad and I turned round and round. He would spin me fast enough to make my stomach flip in the right way, and we would laugh and laugh. This dance this morning was in the living room. The lights on the tree were already turned on so that Mom could bake in the true spirit of the season. And I watched the red and green and blue and white pass by me. I looked into Dad's eyes so that I wouldn't get too dizzy, and I saw his eyes light up, and a tear form, and then drop, slowly down his cheek. The spinning slowed, and he grabbed me tight, held me, as if he were afraid of something. Mom came out of the kitchen and said that seeing Dad and me hugging in front of the Christmas tree was the best present she could ask for. So many strange things happen in life. My life, I mean. Just hours before the dancing, I was in my room buried deep in a very, very different world. I hope I never have to choose between the two. Each one makes me happy for different reasons. I came out here to write my fantasy out. But it is almost too cold and too pretty for me to think about it now. Here and now, at least. I'm going to head over to the Double R and get some hot coffee. Maybe I'll find a private booth. Back soon. L. Christmas Eve Day, 1987. Later. Dear Diary, when I walked in here, the Double R Diner, Norma immediately poured me a cup of coffee. Perfect. I told her I wanted to do some private writing, some stuff for school, so I was going to the booth in back instead of the counter. Before taking my seat, I picked up my cup of coffee from the counter and noticed a very elderly woman sitting very quietly about 2 seats down. Her face was buried in a book bearing the name Shroud of Innocence. She turned the page, absorbed in the story completely. I saw by her plate that she had eaten a piece of cherry pie a la mode and was on her way to quite a caffeine rush. I looked at Norma, who smiled, and I shook my head like, what a great character. A nice, kind-faced old woman, out at the diner for pie and coffee over a good book. I went to the back booth and got comfortable. I was about to get into the fantasy with you, but Shelley Johnson came out of the back room. Leo's wife is prettier than I had remembered. I watched her. I was very careful to study her body when she moved. Her smile. Her voice. I was suddenly going back and forth between feeling totally competitive to feeling like I had no chance at all over her. Then I heard her say something about Leo to Norma. Something about how he's never home, and when he is, he just wants to get it on. I had won. I felt like a bitch for thinking it, but I thought, I've been doing it with him for quite some time now. I'll keep doing it if you won't. I knew that wasn't what she meant. But I couldn't feel sorry for her, or I would never be able to see Leo again. I couldn't deal with that. I watched as the old woman from the counter tried to make her way out of the diner. It was obvious that it was difficult for her, and I felt for a minute like I should get up and help her. But Shelley did it. Norma came over with more coffee and said that the old woman comes in a lot, but it is difficult for her to move. Her walker helps, but she is constantly struggling with each step, as I could probably see. Norma said that there are a lot of senior citizens in Twin Peaks who have no one to take care of them. There is no place for them to go, at least not without heading into Montana. Most want to stay here. It's quiet. They're happy for the most part. I started tossing this idea around in my head, a problem to solve. I would do more than just help the woman to the door. Uh-oh. Competitive Laura, front and center. I hadn't felt like this since elementary school. I was fired up about finding a way to help the senior citizens Norma mentioned. I left a note for Norma when I paid the check. I said that I wanted to talk more about helping these people. I told her she could call me when she got a chance. I'm going to try to catch a ride to Johnny's with Ed Hurley. I can see him outside the window. I hope he's going that way. Speak soon. Laura. P.S. It is late on Christmas Eve night. I'll say more later. But I heard about Norma's upsetting phone call earlier at the diner. When I was with Johnny, I heard Benjamin talking to the sheriff or something. I got the whole story after that because Benjamin was upset about it. I know Norma won't be able to call me back right away because Hank, her husband, who I've never been really impressed with, killed a man on the highway late last night coming back on the Lucky 21 from the border, I think. Anyway, he's going to do time now for vehicular manslaughter. I'm glad he'll be away for a while. Norma always seems so upset by him. I'm sorry for Norma, not for Hank. January 3rd, 1988. Dear Diary, Christmas was interesting. Dad took 3 days off and made it incredibly difficult, without realizing it, for me to get high. I had to fake premenstrual cramps so that he would let me leave and go to my room to be alone. As I went up the stairs, I stopped because I heard Dad say, But it's the new year. I'm on holiday. Why does she want to be alone? I could hear my mother explaining in that kind, so very wise voice that I was a teenager. Parents are like the plague to teenagers, Leland. We're lucky she's even spent this much time with us. She was only out for 3 hours on New Year's Eve, and she was back before midnight to celebrate with us. Mom was doing a great job. So I proceeded upstairs to my room for some privacy and a well-deserved line. A line heals all wounds. Bobby and I actually had a really good New Year's Eve, like Mom said, for 3 hours. 8:30 to 11:30. We went out to the golf course, where about 30 other couples had the same plan. Grab a blanket and the drug of your choice. Alcohol came out the winner, though Bobby and I smoked joint. And curl up on the grass and watch the stars. We were away from the others, but close enough so that as we were smoking our joint, we could overhear the other couples making New Year's resolutions and New Year's wishes on the stars above us. Bobby turned onto his side and put the joint in my mouth. I took a hit, and I remember thinking, he's going to say something serious here. I can feel it. He took a quick hit and held it in, looked upward, exhaled, looked back at me. Laura? Yeah, Bobby. I was feeling warm and good. I love pot. Laura, I'm sorry things are the way they are sometimes. Between us. I mean, I wish we were both. I don't know. Bobby, come on. I was listening to you. Go on. I can't speak for you, but I feel like sometimes you and I are so close. Even when we aren't sleeping together, we're just close. I turned onto my side and leaned my head on my hand. We hadn't talked in ages. We were even stoned, too. Go ahead. I agree. Other times, I don't know what the hell is what. It's like I'm doing all my life stuff. All of Bobby Briggs's stuff. But it doesn't affect me like maybe it should, you know? I wanted to understand, so I gave it a shot. You mean like there's a part of you who goes to school, does chores, goes to work part-time or whatever, but the other part, the part that feels things and cares about things, is inside somewhere asleep. Yeah. Yeah, you sort of got it, but I'm skipping my whole point here. He offered me the last hit off the joint. I decided to take it and hit off it while he held it in his fingertips. I love the way Bobby's skin smells. I took the last hit, and he went on. I was thinking that you and I are together just because it was where we expected we'd be. Is this making sense? I nodded. I knew what he was saying. I just don't want us to be together because of a deal we made because of Leo and all the snow around his place. Sometimes I don't think that matters. And other times, I think that if you had to choose between the snow and me, well, I think I'd lose. I looked down at the blanket we were on. I tried to see its pattern in the darkness, but saw only the vague shadows of the black and red plaid I knew it was. I picked at the wool nervously. Finally, I was able to look up at him. I told him that sometimes I would choose the Coke over him, but that I would sometimes choose Coke over anyone. I told him I didn't want to hurt him or anyone else. I just feel that sometimes I am better company to only myself because of what is happening in my life than I am or would be to anyone else. He told me that he could understand that, Maybe, but he wanted to know if I thought the coke was the problem. I told him, very quietly, that I started really liking coke because I didn't have to think about the problem. I told him I liked pot for the same reason. I remember saying, I can't tell you anything, Bobby. I just can't. I understand if you want to leave me because of it, but I just can't tell you or anyone. I knew that the coke was a problem, but it was nothing next to Bob. He didn't say anything for the longest time. Then he kissed me. He kissed me for a long time. And when he stopped and looked at me, he said I didn't know all of his problems either, and that he would try and understand the times I didn't want to jump up and down with joy. Something like that. Then he said he felt that we belonged together. At least right now he felt that. Things were strange for the rest of the night. Not bad strange. Just different from the way Bobby and I usually were together. We made out for hours. And then, and I say this with all honesty, we made love. No games. No control. No ego. No bad thoughts or thoughts about anything except what was happening. It was amazing. Both of us agreed. I knew I loved Bobby at that moment. And I know I love him now. I just wonder if I can let myself feel any of these wonderful, pure feelings without getting myself in trouble with Bob. Why do I always, always have to second guess my life and my feelings? Why can't I just love him, fight with him, kiss him, etc., without worrying that I'll die because of it? Why do other girls get to have happy lives? Why can't I just tell him the truth?
You don't know the truth.
You're here.
Smart girl.
What do you want?
Just checking in. Fine. I'm here.
You checked in. Now go.
I saw your light on 6 nights in a row.
So did anyone who walked down the street.
Laura Palmer. Be nice.
You never taught me that.
Nice. Definition. Don't be rude.
I'm to the point where I don't care anymore, Bob. Do whatever you need to do.
I don't need anything.
How nice for you. Now get out of my head.
I want things.
I can't hear you.
We both know you can.
Diary, I am here alone in my room, alone. I have had a very nice day, and now I am sitting in bed, on top of the covers, writing to you. I know that I can control this. I know I can
see Bob because he is real. A real threat to you, Laura Palmer, to everyone around you. Be nice. Be glad to see me.
Never.
You only make things worse this way.
That's impossible. Get the fuck out of my head.
I like it here. Might stay a while.
Fine.
Be nice.
Nice? Oh, gee, Bob, is that you? How wonderful of you to drop into my head. The door is always open, you know. Why don't you and I go for a walk in the woods, Bob? Come on, let's take a walk. You can pick the day's game. What will it be? Sex?
No. You're dirty.
You are wrong.
try again, Laura Palmer.
You aren't worth it.
I have a message.
A message from?
A dead man.
I am insane. You are not real. It's simple. I need to get to a doctor because I'm creating this. I am in charge. Calm down. I have to calm down.
Message. A seat is being saved for you, Laura Palmer.
Stop.
Back soon.
See? You are in my head. No one besides you knew the details of my dream of death. Not even Bobby. Bob is not real. Laura.
January 7th, 1988. In the eyes of the visitor, I am something constant. An animal of prey. No matter how many times I am attacked, sent home to the nest, bleeding, I stay. I am the greatest of fools, a defect in the cycle of life. No creature with any respect for life, for itself, for its enemy. Stands again and again in the enemy's path. I stay. I have no respect left for the enemy, for the nest, for the tree, for the prey. I wait. Without choice, I challenge his threat to take this baby. And hand it to death.
January 20th, 1988. Dear Diary, I have some good news. I spent the afternoon with Johnny today. He was in especially good spirits, and I decided that the day was too crisp and beautiful for either of us to stay inside. Out to the front lawn we went. The lawn is a great expanse of green grass and flowers tended year-round by a staff of men and women with green thumbs, fingers, and the rest. It is the perfect place to spend a Saturday afternoon. I usually see Johnny on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, but apparently a specialist came to see him yesterday, and Benjamin asked if I would mind coming today instead. Between you and me, Diary, today was much better for me. Yesterday, for the second time ever, I ditched school. I spent the whole day going through my bedroom, reorganizing things. Mom and Dad were gone all day until 6 p.m. at some convention. I rearranged my furniture a bit and bought a lock for my bedroom door. It was easy to install because it was only a chain lock. A few screws later and I had privacy. If only everything were that simple. I didn't ask Mom or Dad if the idea bothered them, so I chose the chain, figuring they will think I only want the room locked when I am there. This is not the case, but for now, until I can think of a reason that the two of them would approve of and not question, this is it. I went through some of the more recent Flesh World magazines, and found that this is the time to submit a fantasy of mine. There is a contest going on for 1 month only. Fantasy of the Month. The winner receives $200. Anonymity is allowed, although a mailing address is necessary. My safety deposit box allows me 6 weeks free use of a P.O. box. I'll get over there later today and take care of it, I guess. No harm in entering as long as I use a different name. Today, I needed a fresh start. My time with Johnny was wonderful and, dare I say, almost spiritual. We were lying face to face on our stomachs while he requested that I tell him story after story.
The moment I would finish one, he would applaud and say, "Story." He didn't want to be read to. He wanted nonfiction, life experiences. All that went through my head at first was, this is impossible. I can't tell him any of my stories. But eventually I realized that not only did I have some suitable stories, but that I was being far too forgetful of Johnny's mental level. I could have recited the grocery list with intonations like those of storytelling, and he would have stood up to cheer. He wanted to feel included in a face-to-face discussion, some interaction, spoken to rather than spoken about. I was able to stop pitying myself and to recall some of the happiest times in my life, as well as some of the most sad. Each story helped me as much as it did Johnny. I had a chance to realize how far away I had kept happiness and how much I missed it. As you can imagine, I basically took full advantage of the chance to just babble on to someone, story or no story, uninterrupted. No questions, no comments, no judgments on who I was or where I'd be going. Once dead, Johnny is simply the best listener around. I felt very refreshed and even entertained, thanks to Johnny's innocent mimicry of faces in conversation. He was always nodding as if he understood, smiling when I would, and at the mention of the words, "the end," he would put all his energy into applauding me. At about 2:30, Mrs. Horn, who I was surprised to see without shopping bags under each arm and a plane ticket in her mouth, called the two of us in for lunch. When I looked at my watch, I was shocked to see that almost 3.5 hours had gone by. Before I could get up, Johnny took hold of my hands and smiled one of the biggest smiles ever. He closed his eyes, reopened them, and said his very first sentence. He said, "I love you, Laura." I could go on and on about how wonderful that was, both as an incredible leap for him as well as for me. It was the highest compliment I have ever been given. After lunch, I left to open my P.O. box. I'm going to have to think carefully about this fantasy. Perhaps I shouldn't write it here, in your pages, because unless it is printed, it didn't really happen to me, did it? More soon. Laura. February 1st, 1988. Dear Diary, I've been going over and over my sexual experiences and have decided that it is important to look at least the initials of each person I have been with. B. 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 L. J. R. P. J. C. L. T. T. R. D. M. J. C. D. M. M-R-M, D-G, G-N, G-P, D-L, M-R, M-F, R-D, T-T-O, K-M-Y, S-R, A-N, M-D, J-H, M-F, C-S, BGD, LD, JH, and several unseen unknowns out by the cabin. TPS, MT, GL, JS, MVL, CS, DMJ,
WNMSRDDSCHPBE. February 9th, 1988. Dear Diary, something very strange has happened. I snuck out of the house last night to go see Leo and Jacques at the cabin. Ronette was supposed to be there too, and I was pretty excited about seeing her. Besides, it had been ages since I could talk about things with a girl. Donna just wouldn't understand all of this. I needed girl talk, badly. I began walking, but then decided I was too impatient. A big mistake. And so I headed toward Highway 21 in hopes of hitching a ride the next mile or two to the cabin. About 15 minutes passed before I saw a big rig, just like Leo's, coming down the road. I stuck my thumbs out, and sure enough, the truck pulled over and the door opened. Inside the cab were four very drunk, very drugged up truckers who, from what I could understand, had been in town drinking. One of them offered me a beer, and I took it, not really because I wanted it, but because I was suddenly afraid of upsetting any of them. I told them where I needed to be dropped off, and just before my stop, I finished the beer and began peeling the label off the bottle nervously. I realized we were not going to stop. I told the driver he was about to pass my dropping point. And he told me I should know better than to be hitchhiking late at night with a body like mine poured into my jeans and t-shirt the way it was. I swear, I was not poured into my clothes, Diary. My only mistake was leaving the trail through the woods and heading out to the highway alone. It was a big mistake, but I wasn't thinking. We drove up through the Twin Peaks to a seedy little motel that I wasn't even convinced was owned and open due to its shabby appearance. But needless to say, these guys already had two rooms and basically carried me into the first. I caught the room number, 207, in case I could call for help. I would know where I was. I wasn't sure I'd get out of here in one piece. All of them became incredibly rowdy. They were screaming at the top of their lungs and shouting out vulgar language. I thought for a moment that if I could just stand up without anyone's noticing, I could outrun any of these drunk jerk-offs. I was as careful as I could be. But the moment I tried to stand, three of the four guys were on me.
"Where are you going, baby? Hey, why don't you and I go into the next room and do a little private dancing?" He was the ugliest of all of them.
I knew that if I didn't do something soon, something to manipulate the situation my way, they would become violent and most likely rape me. I realized that I might never come out of it alive. I was horrified. I forced a smile. "Listen, all of you." One of the guys looked at me like I was out of my mind to be taking such liberties. He was interested, though, in what I was going to say, because he got all of them to shut up and gather around the chair I was in. I squeezed yet another false smile out of my face and went on. "Listen, if you all want to play tonight, and you know what I mean, then let's do it right, okay?" One of the guys, the one with tattoos everywhere, stepped up to the chair and kicked the hell out of it, five or six times. I tried not to look as mortified as I was. He bent down, greasy hair in his face, his breath like garbage.
"You better watch your mouth, little hitchhiker, 'cause where I'm from, a hole like you would never dare tell a man that he ain't doing a job that beats all other jobs."
"I didn't mean to imply that you weren't experienced. I can tell that you are. just by watching you move. God, they were all so awful. My tongue was shaking in my mouth, nervous and lying. I was so stupid. Another of the guys, the youngest, and the only one with any concern for me at all, suggested they hear what I had to say. I slid myself back to an upright position in the chair and looked at all of them, carefully. I thought, just go for it. It's either going to work, or they're probably going to rape and kill you. You can't let people like this take your life. Just make it up as you go along, Laura. Okay. I am not opposed to drinking, drugs, or sex, all in measured doses. I am not opposed to getting a little kinky, getting motherly, or becoming a little girl, more of a little girl. Nor am I opposed to my performing a solo show for everyone. There were belches and nodding heads, 8 big eyes growing wider. I think all of you will like my show very much. I'll even invent some new things for you, new touches. And if anything should come to you about what you want to see me do, you come over and whisper in my ear. I'll play games. But here's the deal. I get a ride back to town, and I walk out of here the same way I walked in. No violence. One of the guys decided he was too macho for this and said, I'll slap you right upside the head if I get the urge, bitch. I gathered my nerves enough to lean toward him and appear confident. If you get the urge to slap me, as you said, right upside the head, I haven't done my job. I swallowed hard. You can call me bitch and whatever else, but let's just try and get along, okay? It took me another 40 minutes after they agreed to my show to get them to stop with all of the attitude and the yelling. Finally, I offered each a Valium in his beer and told them to sit on the couch, drink the beer, and I would start. I have never been so frightened, ever. Forget nightmares. Forget near misses with a speeding car on a wet road. Forget Bob, even, simply because, in comparison to this, it was 4-1. And each of them was big enough to eat my entire body as a snack before lunch. All of them sat on the couch, except one, who I told to watch the door so that no one would think I was planning an escape. I pulled a chair around to the middle of the room, a wooden chair, nice high back, almost too perfect. I took a few steps to each side of the room and switched off the lights. Slowly, I began to undress, and each time I removed a piece of clothing, I memorized where I had tossed it, so if they did pass out like I planned, I would be able to dress quickly and get out. I began to talk to myself. I imagined myself being stoned so that I could relax. I was so damned afraid that someone was going to jump up and say, "You're history, baby." But no one did. I slowly began the routine of the little girl lost in the woods, a favorite of Leo's and Jacques's, because I can become mommy so fast. I prayed that I could keep them intrigued long enough to watch their eyelids get heavy. I went to the man at the door, probably the meanest one, and I lifted his hand, which was surprisingly relaxed, onto my chest, and I talked to him softly. It was a good 15 minutes that he was touching me and really getting into talking back with me, and I could feel him giving in, just like Jacques. One of the others got selfish and said,
Hey, what about over here?
Don't you worry, boys. I don't get tired. I never get bored. And it would be impossible to forget who's in this room. I had to keep all of them happy. I swung the chair around and asked the man with me to kneel down. I told him softly, so that it would not appear as a threat, and began to dance. I went all around the room and paid attention to each of them, admiring them, anything about them. Lying. None of them were passing out. Finally, I made it back to the chair. Next began the hottest part of the whole piece, a very rowdy, raunchy sit-and-spin routine during which all of them leaned forward and looked closely at me as I played. I continued this and elaborated on it, extended it. I did all I could think of to get them physically and emotionally intoxicated. Everyone was looking tired, but they were still managing to clap and whistle. To be brief, this went on until three of the four guys passed out, and I was left with one. A big, round dude with a three-day beard and saggy eyes. He told me I mesmerized him. He asked if I wanted to go into the other room. He said he had the key. I came up close and asked, "What about the truck? Can we do it in there?"
"Sure, it's your back, baby."
So I grabbed what I could of my clothing, minus the socks and bra, and ventured out into the night, trying to think of a way to get out of this place as soon as possible. I needed to get out, get high, get home. As soon as I was able, I sat in the driver's seat and called him over with my pursed lips. He slid across the vinyl seats fast. He buried himself deep in my chest, and I thought, "Okay, Laura, find the bottle with your hand. There. Don't move too quickly. Distract him. And smash!" I whacked the guy over the head with the bottle and drew blood. He was bleeding all over. I jumped out of the truck and began running, half naked. So what? I wanted to get away from them before they realized what I had done. I went to Jacques' cabin, hoping he and Leo would be there, still with Ronette. When I got there, I was pretty haggard, pretty emotionally beaten. I burst into tears and fell to my knees on the floor. Ronette came to me and helped me get to the couch. I couldn't stop crying. I was even ashamed that I was able to get myself out of it the way I did. I felt like the dirtiest person ever. Bob was right. He was so right. I grabbed a hold of Ronette's arm and I heard her say, "There's blood all over her. Let's get her cleaned up. She's only going to stay upset with blood all over her body." The next thing I remember was waking up in my own bed with a note clenched in my fist. "Dear Laura, we tried to calm you down as much as possible, but you were hysterical and just kept asking to go home. I don't think anyone heard us coming in, but if you get caught, tell them what happened. Everything is okay now. I know you were scared. Maybe we can see each other in a couple of days and talk or something, okay? Ronette." So there's my night. You would think I'd learn, but I guess I just can't, for some reason. I've even had thoughts since waking up this morning about how I could have done a better show for those creeps. My brain actually goes over it again and again, like a skip in a record. Except that I'm making it better, more relaxed. I say smarter things. I actually find myself thinking of going and looking for them. I must be going crazy. These thoughts are all wrong. I am all wrong. Speak to you later, Laura. March 4th, 1988. Dear Diary, I spent yesterday with Donna, and I realized that we have nothing to say to each other anymore. Sure, we chat, and she talks, but the whole time I was there, all I could think of was getting out of her house. I could feel the pure, perfect little walls closing in on me. She actually took me to her room and closed the door to whisper that she and Mike are going all the way soon. They're planning the whole event. Thursday night? I don't remember. So she tells me this, and I'm supposed to say, "Wow, Donna, are you sure you want to do that?" So I guess Donna is getting it pretty good from Bobby's best buddy, Mike. Remember him? The chewing gum commercial? All I can say is that I hope he's good to Donna. I always thought he was an asshole. But I don't have to fuck him, right? Have fun, Donna. Laura. March 10th, 1988. Dear Diary, I was just sitting here in my room thinking about Bobby. Maybe I shouldn't have told him what happened with the truckers, because he hasn't talked to me since then. I told him the truth, just the way he and I talked about on New Year's Eve. We wanted to be honest. We said we were in love. I only did what I did to get out alive. Benjamin Horn just called. Mom yelled up the stairway that it was for me and that it was Benjamin Horn. My first question, before even a hello, was, "Is Johnny okay? What is it?" He said that I should sit down for a minute. I knew Dad was home. Mom was home. Johnny's all right. What is it? He said that Troy had been found this morning on the tracks up by the border. His leg was broken. And three of his shoes had come off, not to mention the fact that he was completely malnourished. He hadn't been able to find food. Benjamin said he was sure it was Troy because of the Broken Circle brand on him. Benjamin said that he watched the border police shoot him twice to the head. He said it appeared that someone had let him out. He promised me over the phone that he would find this awful person and make certain they knew what they had done to a beautiful young horse. I hung up. I looked around, and everything went gray. Black. Gray. Black. I am so bad. Everywhere I turn, something tells me I am an evil, wrong, bad person. How could I have done such a thing to Troy? If I weren't so fucked up and horrible, I could have gone out right this minute and ridden him, taken the both of us off into the fields where we could have survived together somehow. I cannot believe what is happening to me in my life. How can one day be so unbelievably precious and another a nightmare? A dark dream that makes me dream of dying right this very minute. Now.
April 7th, 1988. Dear Diary, not only do I love my job at the perfume counter, but I adore working with someone as cool as Ronette. She always understands when I'm depressed and doesn't get down on me for it. Bobby is speaking to me again, and we date fairly regular, maybe twice a week, at the most, or an average of, let's say, 5 times a month. But used to see each other every day. Now, in school, we hardly hang out together. The funny thing is, we were voted best couple this semester by the student body. I think we care for each other very much, but we have become objects of convenience and comfort to one another. Without the love and attentiveness there used to be. We get high together a lot, mostly over at Leo's or out by the Pearl Lakes. The times that we get high at Leo's, especially lately, Bobby pays more attention to Shelley than he does to Leo or me. I figure they'll have an affair, if they aren't already secretly involved. I told Leo this the other night, which was a definite mistake on my part. I wish I could always blame the stupid things that come out of my mouth on the coke that goes up my nose, but no such luck. I had to beg him to calm down. I've never seen such violence come up so suddenly. I don't doubt for a moment that Leo has a bad temper, but it was how much rage he felt in so little time that concerned me. Personally, I hope Bobby and Shelley are having a relationship. I don't like the idea of being alone at all, but worse things could happen, and I think Bobby and Shelley are good for each other. Dare I say that Leo Johnson and Laura Palmer are cut from the same cloth? Whatever. Either way, my point is that Leo and I sleep together more often than Bobby and I do. And I know it is the same for Leo and Shelley. Why do we pick up the people we do? Avoiding loneliness at almost any cost. Picking a mate by his work schedule, his paycheck, or his abilities in the bedroom are good reasons if you are fortunate enough to find a guy like that who is a nice guy as well. Bobby seemed right for me. He was there. He was cute. Popular. Good family background. And he swore his love to me again and again until he finally realized that I cannot love anything right now. Falling in love is like holding a white flag out to your enemies and saying, "We give up. We're in love." Love is surrender. I can't do that until I know for certain that Bob is really dead. Until there is a corpse that I can kick as many times as I please. God, I hope that day comes soon. Laura. April 10th, 1988. Dear Diary, I went to Holmes Department Store today for my introductory meeting, even though I've been there over a month. I guess I expected to learn more than I already know. Mr. Battis, the store's manager, reminds me of a large fruit, something slowly rotting. What is he doing here? And when will he leave? Poor guy. Mr. Battis feels so guilty about screwing the boss's friends that he never leaves the area around the perfume counter. I feel like he's spying on me. A constant pest who won't allow me a bullet blast or a pat on Ronette's ass. I remember feeling intimidated by Benjamin's office that day. The size of the room. The number of phone lines blinking constantly. His view. The size of his couch. Ugh. Benjamin said to me that day, "Someone from personnel will be calling you at home, Laura, to set up an introductory meeting sometime soon." No such luck. Mr. Battis is somewhat rotund and older. Less distinguished than I had imagined, and far less interesting to be around. Either way, I have to tell him sometime quite soon that he's more annoying to everyone down here than he is helpful, and that I personally am tired of pretending to smile at his ridiculous face and boring sense of humor. I'm sure I sound like a bitch, but hey, I've earned it.
I work hard, and sometimes things get to be too much for me. I'm taking my break. Be back in 15 minutes. I need a cigarette and a line. I'm back. Just as I was exiting the ladies' bathroom, I saw Donna approaching my counter. Damn. Just as I was feeling better, too. She came up and started jabbering away about her trip out of town next week to check out colleges, and how she was going to miss Mike so much. And how much does this little bottle here cost? I was happy to see her, but not happy at the same time. It upset me that she was so happy with Mike. Not that I wanted him to mistreat her, but deep down I wanted to know that she liked me more or needed my company more than his. I realize when I see it written here how selfish I am, especially when I've stopped calling her. We're not really even friends anymore. We're like everyone else, I guess. We promise that something is forever, when it is really only as long as it takes for us to tire of it. When she walked away and out the door, it was like she was leaving forever. Laura. April 21st, 1988. Dear Diary, Ronette just called from work to say that, even though it's my day off, assistance isn't coming until evening and she needs a lot of help at the counter. Would I mind coming in? In other words, tell everyone at home that you're working late. There's a private party with Leo and Jacques at the cabin in the woods. Ronette and I made up codes for things and specific places. I need your assistance right away. Means, I need a hit of coke. Have any? Or, assistance is needed at the counter now. Means, coke is not at the cabin. Bring what you've got. So, Ronette and I drove up there. And on the way, I tried to convince her that she would never